Welcome to Holistic Matters, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended.
We're at the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians annual meeting in Portland, Oregon, and we're recording live on Facebook. We have the pleasure today of being with Dr. Carrie Jones, who is a functional medicine naturopath and a women's health and hormone clinician expert.
Yeah, expert. Yeah. That's what I do. Yeah.
So thanks for joining us, Dr. Jones, today.
Yeah.
We just left your seminar to an overcrowded space. It was like an exciting presentation. So,
yeah,
so thanks very much for that.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought we might give our listeners who weren't able to attend AANP this year some of the insight from your presentation.
Yeah.
So thanks very much. So one of the issues that we're beginning to see more and more of is particularly in the aging process and a little bit not only because of women's health issues, but you know the importance that the endocrine system has on influencing a lot of other systems and kind of vice versa.
Right.
But can you share with our listeners today your perspective on hormone balance and being able to manage that and get that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, we were saying off camera that most people go to the doctor and they say, I feel hormonal. I think my hormones are off. And they don't quite know what that means. They don't quite know what hormones they're talking about, but they know that something has shifted. And that it's that system, that endocrine system, that hormone system, that when your estrogen's off in a man or a woman, when your testosterone's off in a man or a woman, your thyroid, your DHEA, your progesterone, it's like you feel it. And it affects everything because if you feel hormonal, then you're probably not in a good mood and you probably aren't sleeping that well and you probably, you know, have a tough time dealing with stress. And it just cascades when this whole system is out of balance, out of whack.
So feeling hormonal, you know, many practitioners will describe that sensation when it's first noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
What they'll point it out is, well, all of a sudden I got this belly fat.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my center of gravity just dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the first sign or is it more of kind of energetics and sluggishness and increased fatigue?
You know, fatigue is a big one. I'd say fatigue is probably the number one symptom I hear. Belly fat's probably number two, followed by insomnia, you know. But then in just moodiness, you know, women will say, I feel more anxious, I feel more angry, I have less patience.
Right.
Men will say, I'm less motivated, I don't want to do the things, I don't have as much passion as I used to.
Right.
And by the way, I can't sleep and I'm tired and I've got this tire around my gut. What is this?
So what's the starting point? How do you walk a patient through, and then ultimately start putting them on a treatment regimen?
Definitely, I'm a big fan of obviously getting the entire case, the symptoms, and everything going on. But I also test because, as we know, different hormones can all cause the same symptom. You know, somebody comes in, I'm so tired, I can't get out of bed. Maybe it's cortisol, but maybe it's thyroid. You know, maybe it's in adrenaline, your epinephrine. Maybe it's your androgens, testosterone and DHEA, and they all require different approaches. And so I test first to see what hormone or hormones are we working with, and then I go from there.
And so what about identifying that patient that's more than likely a candidate for this? Is there an age threshold? Or?
There's not. And that's what's so scary about this day and age, and I'm sure you see it too, is that hormonal stuff is happening young. Right? Men are losing their testosterone young, and girls are going through puberty young. And so used to say, especially like in men with the low testosterone thing, like 50s and 60s, now I have men in their 20s who absolutely have low testosterone. Women would say, I have hot flashes. Oh, hot flashes only happens in menopause. No, I have women in their 20s with hot flashes and night sweats. It can happen at any age.
But are the root causes of, say, a loss of testosterone different by age? So, for example, male in the 20s might be an endurance athlete that has suppressed testosterone versus, say, the natural process of aging.
Yep, absolutely. I think there's a lot there. You can absolutely divide it by age in some categories, but something like chemicals, toxicants, it's happening at every age. And it's building, so the man who gets a lot of exposure in his teens and 20s, by the time he's 60, you know, he just has 40 years, 50 years of all that exposure.
And so to confirm that, is there a diagnostic panel that you routinely use?
For the hormone part, I routinely use the Dutch test when it comes to the hormone and the phase 1 and 2 metabolism. And then I actually use stool testing for the phase 3 hormone metabolism, which is when we're looking at like beta-glucuronidase and the microbiome and things like that. And then there's other tests that can look at chemicals, you know, your level of glyphosate, your level of BPA, atrazine, those kind of things.
Right. And how do you put all the systems together? It's kind of an interesting
right.
and maybe a daunting challenge, right? Would
yeah.
you start with like HPA access and look at all the key components of the endocrine system?
Often. Yeah.
Right to, let's do hormone replacement.
I often start with the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, because if you start with the basics, if you get somebody sleeping properly, if you get them eating regularly, their blood sugar balanced, if you get their chemicals out of their life as much as you can, if you get them having regular bowel movements, just normal, healthy human processes, generally about 50% of the hormones fix themselves. Because I can give you all the hormone replacement or supplements in the world, but if you're using chemicals every day, it's not going to work. Or if you're like, well, I stay up till 4 a.m. partying, you know, like that's I don't have a supplement for that.
Right, right. Stop doing that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So if you're up till 4 a.m. every day.
Yeah, right. So I think there's a little bit of a myth or lack of awareness on testosterone and estrogen aren't necessarily either male or female
right.
dominant. Right. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's actually just more in the body. So men have more testosterone than women do, but women absolutely need it. We need it for our bones and our brain and our muscle mass, our energy or libido. Men need estrogen, which I think is surprising for a lot of people. Men tend to think, well, estrogen's bad. It will give me breast development and gut, you know, belly fat. Men, you need estrogen as well for brain and bone and, you know, other things. It's just like same with women. Women just need more estrogen
right.
than men do. It's Goldilocks. You just have to be in balance.
And what therapeutic regimen do you start these patients on? So if you're going to prescribe testosterone mm-hmm. or estrogen, will that be in some cycle, like a 12-week cycle, or is it
on, for term? Like how long? Like if I use yeah. HRT or something? Right. That depends. Everything depends. It's like uh-huh. the worst answer ever. If she is like it's a woman, and if she is still cycling, getting her period, I tend to focus more in the second half, the luteal phase. If she's menopausal, I tend to give her breaks. I was taught by a compounding pharmacy to do either 5 days on, 2 days off, or 6 days on, 1 day off. And I found that works really, really well for women. And then with men, it's a little bit different just because they don't cycle. Although we may all agree that men have some sort of cycle. but I'm also careful of his age. If he's in his 20s or 30s and they want testosterone replacement, but he hasn't had a family yet, that testosterone replacement will suppress sperm production and suppress his own testosterone production. So then maybe I look at other things besides addressing the cause of maybe why is testosterone low at that age. Maybe you're looking at something else, Clomid or HCG, so I can preserve a sperm function. So I run the whole gamut from like lifestyle, sleep, diet, all the way up to replacement, but I have to be cognizant of where they are in life.
There's some new trends that we're beginning to see a little bit is that in the administration of hormone that you also need some kind of an energy substrate.
Right.
And more and more we're seeing things in the use of peptides as an example.
Yeah.
Or protein. Do you combine things like that?
You know, I'm just getting into peptides. I'm just learning more about them, but they are wildly popular and my colleagues who use them get phenomenal results. And so I'm open, ready to learn.
Are they standalone uses typically or do you combine it with
you? I believe you can do standalone, but don't quote me on that. I don't actually know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so, one of the things that's always been interesting for probably, it must be 30 years, when the original women's health initiative was started by a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
And the initial results, which we come to know were really incomplete set of analysis.
So much so.
Were a little bit misleading and causes a lot of pause now
mm-hmm.
by many practitioners on hormone replacement therapy. Is it good to use?
Right.
Does it cause long-term health concerns?
Right.
And most of those myths or concerns have been demonstrated not to necessarily be the case.
Yep. Their subsequent studies have come out to say they don't say oopsies, but I say oopsies, where they're like, oops. Turns out that's not true.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had a chance to talk to many practitioners who've been using hormone replacement therapy, mm-hmm. particularly in their female populations, mm-hmm. for longer than 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
And consistently, almost every 6 months, doing bloods and diagnostics mm-hmm. and not seeing anything other than positive outcome.
There's a really interesting, there's a book, the book I mentioned in the beginning, Estrogen Matters by Avram Blooming. And they have a section in it where they explain, it's cardiovascular disease that's going to kill men and women. It's the most common disease, right? But all the women fear breast cancer, understandably. And they were saying estrogen, estradiol, is so critically important to prevent and help prevent cardiovascular disease, but other things like Alzheimer's and dementia, osteoporosis. But we're so afraid of breast cancer, which the majority of women who are diagnosed at stage one are going to survive. It's going to not be fun. I'm not saying that. But they're probably going to survive. That, you know, it's 99.9% survival. But you may not survive cardiovascular disease, and you surely are not going to have fun with Alzheimer's. And so they were kind of making the point, it's a risk-benefit. Maybe we should really consider estradiol. It's the number one thing we know for women that protects us. You may not get breast cancer if you choose not to go on it, but do you want Alzheimer's and increased cardiovascular risk? And I was that really gave me pause for thought of, oh, right, it's not breast cancer that's the number one killer of women. Right. It's cardiovascular disease, and estradiol helps prevent it.
And that's kind of a little known fact. Some of the epidemiological studies recently have suggested that the problem with hot flash, as an example, is because of some kind of hormonal fluctuations, but it indicates an increased risk of cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
Which is another reason why hormone replacement therapy actually has provides some benefits and underlying stabilization of the system.
Yeah, and even dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, it's so rapidly on the rise. I mean, it's scary, the data on Alzheimer's and dementia. We know what estradiol does to the brain. You know, we know how important and healthy and beneficial it is. And so, risk-benefit, right? Yeah.
So, primarily, your practice has been driven by women.
Yes.
But I can only imagine after they experience the great success and you know, kind of this refresh, positive feeling on their health. Do they bring their husbands in?
Absolutely.
Right? So you have a men's health practice.
By force. It's funny. Men will come. I'll talk to the women and they'll say, "I'm going to send my husband in. Here's his problems." And then the men will come in and I'll go, you know, "Hi, I'm Dr. Kerry Jones. What are you here for today?" They're like, "I don't know. My wife had me come in." Like, "Well, I know. Don't worry. She told me."
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So when you're using hormone replacement therapy, there's also discussions in the clinical world about combining that with estrogen detoxification.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about like detox programming, particularly related first to estrogen therapy. Do you use detox?
I do. I absolutely do. Again, I'm trying to mitigate risk. And so with detox in particular in estrogen, men and women, they go through three phases. So phase one and two predominantly in the liver, phase three in the gut, in the microbiome. And so if the phase one, two, and three, any of those steps aren't working, then there's an increased chance for the negative outcomes of estrogen. So you have an increased chance for DNA damage and potential mutation causing cancer. So if I'm putting somebody on estrogen, then I want to make sure that those 1, 2, 3 pathways are functioning, they're open, they're clear, and we're not going down the bad pathway, we're going down a better pathway.
Right. So when do you start the detox process? Would you detox them before they start hormone replacement
therapy? Well, because I test them ahead of time, before I even start them on the hormone replacement, I have a pretty good gauge of what pathways they already go down.
Right.
So sometimes I won't even start the hormones until I know I have their detoxification working, right? And because I don't want to add more fuel to the fire or more water to the bathtub, which is the bathtub's my analogy for detox. And so once I know I have those open and better and they're working, then I can introduce estrogen and feel more confident about it.
Right. Yeah. Fantastic. And so will that be like a 28-day program, or will you use shorter programs and frequently during the course of the year?
With the detox?
Yeah.
And I check up on it. I usually will retest them after about 3 to 6 months. And usually I go by their symptoms. So for example, like the phase three is intestinal health, microbiome. And so if she comes in and she says, "I have a lot of constipation, a lot of gas and bloating," it's going to take time, you know, to get the microbiome, you know, the health of the intestines back. And that might take 3 months. It might take a full year, you know, that we're working on it until she feels like really good and symptoms are gone and all that stuff. Other women just need a little bit of tweaking.
Right.
You know, maybe they're using plastic every day and it's messing up their detox pathways. Maybe they're drinking a bottle of wine a day, you know, really common.
There's something wrong with that?
Yeah, I know. Right? it will affect your, when you're partying until 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And before we go on estrogen, we're going to have to address it because it increases your risk for cancer creation, and I don't want that. So
in a detox program, are there certain things or components in a formula that you think are really important?
Yeah.
Not all detox programs have the ability to actually activate phase one and then make sure that the system is balanced after all that. But are there important features that you want to make sure?
Yeah, well, definitely our detox pathways are what, like breathing, right? Breathing, sweating, bowel movements. You know, like there's different ways that we can activate detox. In particular to estrogen, I'm focused more on liver and intestines. But definitely people who have like lots of chemical exposure, you know, sweating is so great for that. Or those stealth infections, mold or, you know, the other things, that sweating is really good for that. So many people now breathe up here. You know, they take those really short, shallow breaths and getting the deep breathing, lung oxygen exchange. And so, but yes, with estrogen, I'm primarily focused liver and intestines and getting that really smooth. Right. Yeah.
So let's go beyond a little bit of kind of detox specific to hormone use, hormone replacement therapy. You've mentioned a couple times exposure to the environment. People
who
consume beverages and plastic, some of the other environmental toxins. What about a general detox program? And because of all the environmental pressors and stressors that exist out there now.
Right. And the first step is just elimination, right? Yeah. Just get it out. I mean, it's in your body, but at the same time, like stop coming into contact with it. So a lot of times we're discussing, you know, what do you use for your makeup and your skincare? What are you putting on your hair? And do you have air fresheners in your car and around your house?
Right, right.
And just, the, you know, what do you clean your house with? And just keep in mind that's on you all the time.
Yeah.
And just so working on the elimination. And then after that, we're looking at, you know, like what do you use in your yard? And what do you store your food in? And being careful when you go out to eat. And just, choices like that. Like where I work, I drive through wine country. It's a beautiful drive. Every farm uses glyphosate, every single one. And I have my windows up, right? I have my circulation on in my car. I'm very careful. I take my glutathione, because I know it's in the air and I'm just going to breathe it in. And it's not intentional. It's just what they use.
Are there a top three or top five list of items that you want to tell your patients to eliminate exposure to?
Plastic, for hormones especially, plastics is a big one. The heated plastics.
BPA?
BPA, yep. And it's BPS, BPF. Yeah. Everyone thinks, BPA free, I'm safe, and it's still plastic. It's unfortunately not enough. So I'm encouraging stainless steel and glass as much as people can.
So that's including even the things, let's say, the packaging of the cosmetics you buy, the packaging of the shampoo that you use.
Yep.
I mean, it's all of that. It's not
it
just
can be.
Things that you're consuming from.
Absolutely. Yeah. It can be.
Wow.
It can be.
Awesome.
So, I mean, doing that and then filtering is a big one. So using water filters and shower filters, you know, because people think, well, I take a quick shower, you know, my husband will say, well, my shower's only a couple minutes. I'm really quick. I'm like, right, but it's hot and it opens your pores. And then now anything, whatever's in your water system is now being directly driven right into. Or if you're using, you know, body washes that are full of chemicals and fragrance and stuff, and now your pores are open, and then you wash your body, and you've just absorbed all of that. So I'm like, just be very careful that it's 100% affecting your hormones and your detox.
So what do you think in this day and age, though, you know, the 12 months, there's a lot of exposure.
Yeah.
I mean, is there one big detox a year that you would recommend and a series of short cleanses?
Yes. Or? So do what you can every day.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. What I hear colleagues say the most is that they'll do it at the change of season. So from spring into summer and then summer into fall seems to be nice transition times, just as a reminder, like, hey, it's spring into summer, like let's clean house, let's get everything open, let's get prepared for summer. And then as we move into fall, like, okay, everything you did in the summer, like let's work on, you know, the liver, let's work on the intestines, let's work on sweating, let's work on, you know, breathing, hydration. And then using supplements, using herbs and nutrients that are very liver protective and whatnot to move it out.
So detox used to be considered kind of like a singular focus on, the new year, new year resolution, kind of a weight loss link.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much bigger, much more important than that now.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, again, just like what we were talking about with all the exposures, like just every day we come across something.
Yeah. So what do you do with a new patient who comes in and you want them to do a detox program?
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time that they're being asked to participate in a detox program. They get through the first 3 days and they think, doctor, I can't keep doing this. I
mean, right.
How do you overcome that?
Yeah, so it's a lot of education, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of education. It's a lot of baby steps. So it's just explaining the importance of just the everyday general detoxification, what you can do to empower yourself every day, the choices you make, that you don't have to make all the choices at once. I'm not asking you to spend thousands to replace everything in your house tomorrow, you know, or you can, over time, as things run out, switch to something else. And then just the food you eat. Like, hey, let's start looking at the, you know, the dirty 12 and the clean whatever, you know, like whatever foods. Let's get these organic now, and like let's look at the meat you eat. And so it's just sort of like, okay, now these are the baby steps that I want you to take just to start wrapping your mind around. Let's get you healthier. Let's get your body functioning healthier. Let's get your hormones back in balance. Let's get you conscious of what is going on both in your body and out in the world. And how can we enable our body to properly detox? Because we detox, people don't realize this when they think detox. They're like, oh yeah, I do that once a year. I'm like, no, you do it every second of every day, 365 days a year. And like I said earlier, our detox pathways don't stop for holidays. They don't take Sunday off. You know, they're not done at 6. Like they do it all the time. So we're just trying to help that.
So how about, if you don't mind, we switch a little bit to more of the personal side. What brought you to the profession?
To the profession. So I was conventional all the way. I was in my undergrad. I was set up to go to become an MD. And I worked at two different hospitals, getting hours and experience. One was in pediatrics, and it was very, very clinical, and it was very sterile, and it was very non-relationship building. The other was in a hospital that was doing a lot of community outreach, so education on diabetes and blood pressure and alcohol, and I absolutely was enthralled with the community outreach. That's what I wanted to do. And I decided that conventional route was not for me. Ended up moving to Portland, Oregon, where we are today, and I found the naturopathic medical school, and I realized that's what I want to do. That's the medicine I want to be in.
So where were you before you moved to Portland?
Ohio.
Oh, like one of the big cities?
I was outside of Columbus.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was afraid you were going to say Cleveland.
No.
The lake and you were exposed to the...
No. Outside of Columbus, God. Yeah.
Fantastic.
No.
So your interest in hormone replacement and functional medicine?
Yeah, I've known since I was a little kid that I wanted to be a women's health doctor. Yeah, just it's always something I've gravitated towards. It's the one thing I know. I love to educate about it. I like to take the tough topic and break it down really simple so people feel empowered about hormones. And I've run with it. So I joke all the time. Pediatrics, not my thing. If you hurt your ankle partying at 4 a.m, don't call me. I don't know what to do.
So how do you educate your patients? I mean, it's kind of a complicated topic.
Yep.
So patient education.
Huge.
You must spend a lot of time.
A lot. Yeah. I do a lot either through social media, and I do a lot through, you know, written up handouts and stuff like that. But I find it really important to just spend that time with my patients and draw a lot. And I have a lot of patients that go, can I have that? Can I have that drawing you just did? I'm like, yep, absolutely. I have patients record me. They're like, can I... Yeah. You know, hit record on my phone so I can have my partner listen, my husband, my kid, whatever. I'm like, absolutely.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And your website?
My website?
Dr. Jones?
There's two. So the first one is dutchtest.com. So I have all my webinars, podcasts, everything on there. And then drcarryjones.com, which then links back to Dutch. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Jones, thanks very much for joining us on this live broadcast to Facebook at ANP's 2019 convention. We're excited to have you. Had a great turnout, and we invite our listeners to even join us online again and check out Dr. Jones's websites again. Dr.
Wonderful.
Jones, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Right.
Yeah.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we are talking about how to be the you nature intended.